Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency. GPs working in the NHS are routinely writing sick notes, for patients they have not seen, docs have claimed. Family doctors admit that 95% of requests for time off are waved through after an email request without any further assessment.
It's, you know, a fact of life. If you are working from home and you are cut off socially from people, some of that resilience that you might naturally have can sometimes suffer for some people. That situation is not going to improve unless we can become more economically productive. And the only way we're going to do that is be very, very clear on these are the criteria in terms of how somebody gets signed off. It should not just be a box-ticking exercise.
Welcome back, everyone. Episode 10, it's a special. On the back of recent comments by our beloved leader, Rishi Sunak. I'm not politically affiliated either way, but it may come across ironic. Yeah, we're going to talk about sickness and sick note culture, aren't we?
Yeah, so the whole proposed reforms to the sick note regime, you know, they're calling us sick note Britain, that levels of productivity are at an all-time, unproductivity, at an all-time high, and how we resolve the situation.
Absolutely.
If it can be resolved.
Can it?
Are we too far gone? Is it COVID that's produced this? You know, we've got a lot to chat about and see where we go with this.
I mean, I firmly believe the culture's changed a little bit. And it's not... Our economy suffered a bit as well as a result, whereas other countries I feel like have dealt with it better.
Yeah, and I think the generational changes, I think when you look at perhaps our parents, grandparents, certainly post-war generations that were very much, well, I'm not on a front line, of course I can go to work. You know, everything's better than that.
Yeah.
And very much kind of stiff upper lip and just go to work to provide for your family.
Yeah.
You know, housing evictions were much more common then. You didn't have the protection for perhaps your family that you do now. And I think the expectations in terms of people for work-life balance have very much changed. That's not necessarily a negative thing.
No, not at all.
But I think we're seeing that knock on then into the workplace. If people fundamentally are feeling like they're struggling at work, I think, well, why do I have to be there?
Absolutely. I mean, I've not got an email to read out this week, but I've got like a little bit of framing and background. Mm-hmm. And then on the back of that, we'll go into questions and what have you and pivot either way. Mm-hmm. So the crisis story is such. GPs working in the NHS are routinely writing sick notes, for patients they have not seen, docs have claimed. Family doctors admit that 95% of requests for time off are waved through after an email request without any further assessment. They also admit sick notes are rarely ever denied. Some claim that doctors are too scared to refuse sick notes because they worry patients will become aggressive or write a negative review of their GP practice on social media. We don't want to risk confrontation, claimed one GP in the north of England. Often, we don't know the patient. We just see the request in our inbox and okay it.
So I think that came from the Daily Mail.
Okay.
That's a snippet of an article that came out at the end of April. Mm-hmm. And... So for me, from my perspective, I'm very familiar with seeing sick notes because, or we call them fit notes now. I act for businesses, deal with employers, and it'll often be, we've had a fit note, you know, how do we manage this situation with an employee? And what I would say is in the last 5 years, over 90% of the fit notes that I have seen have all either been for stress, depression, or anxiety.
And that's just before COVID started.
Just before COVID itself, and then afterwards. I would say since COVID, I have maybe seen 3 fit notes that weren't.
So it's all been
mental
stress,
health anxiety,
stuff.
Depression. Yes, it's all in that kind of arena.
Okay.
Is that what the dominant figures within my client base are dealing with on a regular
this
basis?
This isn't a question on my list, but it's been a thought of mine. Do you think like remote working is the reason for that? For example, like I work on a computer and I've been sick recently, but I just stayed at home. Mm-hmm. And like worked on my computer at home.
Yeah.
So like have you seen like a less prevalence in taking days off for people that work remotely?
I wouldn't say that it produces that much of an improvement in terms of those figures. Again, okay. Speaking from within my client base, like not talking about the country at large. Mm-hmm. I would say people working from home are perhaps more likely sometimes to suffer with mental health disorders where they are isolated, they don't have peer support. Mm-hmm. And this isn't a negative have a go at working from home. It's, you know, a fact of life. If you are working from home and you are cut off socially from people, some of that resilience that you might naturally have can sometimes suffer for some people. So I appreciate I'm generalizing there, but I wouldn't say that actually, you know, working from home has reduced sickness levels, because I think we've seen an increase in working from home since COVID, but then also an increase in people being signed off sick. And I'm not a massive advocate of people saying, well, I'm not fit to work, but I am fit to work from home. Well, either you're fit to work or you're not. If you're sick, take a rest day, mm-hmm. take a day off. You shouldn't be feeling pressured to be working. If you're not fit to be in the office to work, then I would argue that actually you're going to, you know, drain yourself, or you're going to hinder your recovery if you push yourself to do a day working from home. And I think that line has sort of been blurred a bit since COVID, as people say, well, you know, it's easier to sit at home and be in my bed and working. Well, are you actually really able to work? And it could be that you say to your employer, well, I am fit to work, but actually I feel like I'm only able to do so from home today. I don't feel well enough to come into the mm-hmm. office. So there's degrees and sort of areas of gray between fit and not fit. And I think with the, you know, what we're going to call the sick note culture, I think that's lost to some extent.
Definitely. I mean, there's also the aspect of, like, it was prevalent in COVID, like contagion. Mm-hmm. Like yeah. not wanting to spread anything. Yeah. That was my sort of main reason.
Yeah. You don't and really I've done it. You know, when you've felt a bit fluey, but you think, actually, you know what? I'm fit to work, I'm fit to operate, but I don't want to make the rest of the workforce ill.
Yeah,
then,
exactly.
You know, I'm happy to stay at home and work. Then mm-hmm. that's different compared to got a blinding migraine, can't even open my computer, not fit to work today. You know, there's yeah. two very, very yeah, different yeah. scenarios there.
Definitely. I mean, we will now delve into the questions. Mm-hmm. So we'll come at it from an employer, first of all. What factors have contributed to the rise in sick note culture? Are GPs handing out sick notes a little too easily?
So from my experience, I would say that the rise is partly attributable to how easy it is to get a fit note mm-hmm. or a sick note. It is extraordinarily easy.
I mean, we've now, read there, it's just emails.
Exactly. So I've actually got an article that I found. It's another Daily Mail article. We do read stuff other than the Daily Mail.
Which we're not politically
we are going to refer to. Just for the comments, straight to the comments on Daily Mail. And the headline on this one, it's a journalist who said, I got two sick notes for stress in under 2 hours without ever speaking to a doctor. All I had to do was pay £25 to fill out an online form. And the fit note was provided.
Where's this 25 quid going?
So I presume this is a private GP service.
Okay.
So where they have gone to ask for a fit note. And so within 2 hours, this person managed to get two fit notes without ever seeing a doctor. And as you scroll down through the article, they had to make a vague statement that I was stressed and needed time off work and handed over my credit card details and got the fit note. Now, this is a journalist who admits that they weren't ill. They were doing this as a matter of research. So that shows just how easy...
No proof.
...this is.
None at all.
And the difficulty that we've got then is you've got people who are genuinely sick, who in response to all these headlines are going, why would you force sick people to work? It is ethically and fundamentally wrong. If someone isn't fit to work, let them have a day off. Mm-hmm. But then we have irrefutably got people who are gaming the system.
Yeah, yeah. So, as we've seen there.
Yeah, and you're seeing these GPs getting trolled for being really honest about the fact that they will sign somebody off without assessing them. And people are saying, you know, we're picking on sick people, we're picking on the most vulnerable in society. But there are people who game the system. There are people who admit that they game the system. And as someone who advises employers and as someone who previously used to advise employees, I know for a fact this goes on.
For 25 quid a month, though?
No, 25 quid is a one-off. That
A month, not a subscription service, is it?
No.
For £25 a sick note, can you blame the GPs, though? Because they must be raking it in.
So NHS GPs aren't paid in the same way as that. So that's a private service that's done that.
We're in the wrong business.
And I would say for private GPs, there's easier ways to make the money than signing fit notes. I mean, what a sort of unstimulating day to sit and sign off a list of fit notes for people that you've never actually medically assessed. So I think it has created this problem now where you have the people who are genuinely ill who will come under more scrutiny from their employer because there are people who game the system. And what it means is that those people, whilst they're on sickness absence, are probably going to be taken through more robust sickness absence procedures and could risk having their employment terminated if they're off long term, because employers are less likely to want to tolerate people who are gaming the system.
Okay. Big cheating going on, basically.
There is. And look, I'm not suggesting that it's the majority of people or anything like that. But what I'm saying is there are people who do game the system. And I see it. You'll invite someone to a disciplinary hearing. The next thing, sick notes in the inbox.
You just know it's coming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can set your watch by it. I would bet my house on it in some circumstances where you say, I'll be advising the employer, we've got serious misconduct. We might have suspended someone. The day that that invitation goes out for a disciplinary hearing, we get a fit note, not fit to work, stress. So, well, of course you're going to be stressed. Because you're in a disciplinary situation.
Naturally. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think some people either are being badly advised or, you know, they're out there Googling and they think it's a way of getting out of a disciplinary. It's not. An employer can discipline somebody who is off sick. We can go through those processes. It's not a way of hiding from the realities of poor behaviour, which is what it is used in some circumstances for.
How do you prevent that, though? Like, how do you say, that's not work-related stress, you're only stressed because you've got to do it. You can't say that, surely.
Well, the problem is, where you've got GPs who, like the ones that we've seen in the press, who will admit that they will get a list of names who've asked for their fit note that day and they will be signed off, they're not looking at that distinction, which is where, and we've talked about it in previous podcasts, is where occupational health comes in.
Occupational health.
That we can send people for an independent assessment to say, well, actually, yes, this person is stressed because they're dealing with day-to-day life pressures and they are experiencing something that is stressful at work. But actually, it's a reaction to a life event. It's not a medical condition. Crack on and hold your disciplinary.
Deal with it.
Exactly.
Deal with it. Question two, how can HRs differentiate between genuine health concerns and abuse of sick leave policies?
So again, it's using those tools that we've got and making sure that we manage a situation properly in line with procedure. We don't want to have a knee-jerk reaction to a fit note coming in. What I don't want is people to listen to this podcast and the next time an employee comes in with a fit note that they go, you're a liar. I don't believe you. Everybody's lying about sick notes because Alyssa said so. That's not what Alyssa
said.
You're
one of them.
That's not what Alyssa said. Alyssa said is some people game the system. But what we need to be doing is if somebody has been signed off by a GP, say we haven't got disciplinary procedures going on, we haven't got grievance or redundancy stuff going on, but someone's been signed off sick for a couple of weeks for stress, we're probably not going to pull them in for a formal capability meeting to see if they're capable of doing their job. We're probably going to go, we've been signed off for a couple of weeks. We hope you feel a bit better. We'll do a return to work to make sure that you're happy coming back into the environment and if there's anything we can do to help you settle back in.
What's a formal capability meeting?
So a formal capability.
You skimmed over that.
Yeah, so let's open that Pandora's box. So if we have somebody who is off on long-term sick, so I'm dealing with one at the moment where someone has been off sick for 2.5 years. They have not been in the workplace for 2.5 years.
Okay.
That person arguably is no longer capable of fulfilling their contract of employment. They've been off for so long, there's no indication that they're going to be coming back anytime soon. So an employer has the ability to terminate someone's contract of employment on the grounds of capability, saying this person's no longer capable of performing their contract.
What's the length of service in that case, total?
So this person, I think they've been with the business 5 or 6 years. So actually almost half of their service. So now what we can't do is just fire that employee. What we need to do is go through a formal capability process. So a bit like the disciplinary stuff, we invite them to attend a meeting. We discuss the reasons why they're off. We look at any medical evidence. We ask them if there's any reasonable adjustments that we can make that would help them come back to work. So that could be allowing a bit of working from home. It could be phased return. It could be changing their duties. It could be looking at physical or auxiliary aids that will help them undertake their job. And we come to an outcome. So what I would, again, would never just be firing after the first meeting. It might be that we issue a warning to say, well, look, this process is underway. We are considering your capability. We're going to be reviewing it over a period. But ultimately, at the end of this process, the decision could be made to terminate your employment.
I imagine these reviews are different depending on what job it is. Like
depending
physical,
on the job
mental.
And also what's wrong with people. So where you've got, say, someone who's been off sick with stress and anxiety for 2 years, then you might approach that slightly differently to someone who's, say, been off sick for 2 years and they are suffering with something like cancer. They're in and out of chemo, radiotherapy, and they're really, and I'm not saying that the person with stress and anxiety isn't really sick, but the person who is having chemo and radio might not actually be able to physically get to a meeting.
They might
not be able to sit in a meeting for an hour without feeling nauseous or deeply unwell, or actually may struggle to process what's going on.
They're two very different things.
They are two very different things. Now, they could be as ill as one another within their own sort of perception and their own experience of the illness that they have got. But depending on someone's capability of attending a meeting and how they can participate, those meetings might be very different. So we go through staged meetings and we might send them to occupational health. We might ask them to see a specialist. We might even ask for, if they've got specialist consultants or doctors, for them to write us a report and answer some questions that we've got. So we could ask that doctor, well, how long do you think they're going to be off? What's their recovery look like? What side effects does their medication give them? Is this something they're going to live with for life? And if so, how can we support and what adjustments can we make to help this person get back to work? And my advice always is in that capability process is that we look at what can we do to support this person back into the workplace? So it's not about forcing them back to work. It's how can we make life a little bit easier in the workplace to give them the best chance of getting back in and having a positive experience at work.
Making little adjustments here and there for them. They'll feel more valued then.
And we've also got an obligation under the Equality Act. If someone's been ill for that long, the likelihood is that they are going to be classed as disabled. Now, if we go through this process and it becomes reasonably clear, so back to that reasonably word that we like so much, that someone is unlikely to return to work within a reasonable period. Now, when we're deciding what's reasonable, we can take into account the size and resources of the business. So if you are a small corner shop with two staff members and you've got someone who's off for a year, that's going to affect you very differently compared to if you're one of the big four or the big five and that you've got 7,000 people working for the business and you can very easily cover that workload. Those larger businesses, generally expected to wait a bit longer in terms of what's reasonable. We conclude someone's unlikely to come back or not within a reasonable period. We can terminate their employment on the grounds of capability. Now, it's not a conduct, so they're not saying, they've done anything wrong, so they would get paid their notice.
Okay, well, that's it.
And any accrued holiday. So the individual that I'm advising on at the moment that's been off for 2.5 years will have accrued holiday during that period.
That's a lot of holiday.
It is, and for a small business who's got to pay that out at the end, you can be talking thousands.
How many employees is it, if you don't mind me? Roughly, don't give the exact number, but roughly.
I think they've got about 30. So, you know, smallish
That'll
business.
That'll affect them, won't it, of course?
It will affect them, because they've got a 12-week notice period to pay out, plus accrued holiday from over a couple of years. It's fairly substantial.
How do you like... I mean, I've got no real expert sort of skin in this game, but how do you get to 2.5 years? Like, how have they not gone off for a year? Like, something's fishy here.
There's a misconception that you can't dismiss someone who's off sick. And it's only when someone then comes to take advice that you go, well, this situation is becoming untenable.
So businesses are going, they're sick, I can't touch them.
There's that misconception. And particularly it's the same with disciplinary proceedings that people think if someone goes off sick, there is a misconception that I can't do anything about this. And I remember from another life when I used to advise claimants, I advised an NHS nurse who'd been off for over 3 years, who was actively trying to return to work.
Right.
So she would email the hospital, HR, where she was a nurse, saying, look, I'm feeling better. I would like to come back to work.
Right.
She'd been off for so long, there'd been personnel change. They had no idea who she was.
Oh, goodness.
So they're saying, well, we don't know who you are. She'd put, you're still paying me.
I'm on your records,
mate. They paid her full pay for over 3 years.
And they didn't know?
No, so there was loss of, we call it sort of corporate memory, where you've got personnel change and things get forgotten about.
There's that many people in machine.
Exactly. Yeah, so bearing in mind, this is the NHS, paid for 3 years, full pay, and she's trying to come back to work and they're going, we're doing who you are.
She goes, that must be nice.
And she was sending them pay slips going, but you're paying me. So please try and find out who I am.
Sure, there's record of this.
And her big concern and the reason why she came to a lawyer was she was saying, well, my registration's at risk. You have to have done... you know, CPD and learning and actually, you know, being practices, I could end up in the position where I can't be a nurse anymore.
Looks like a quasi expired sort of thing.
So they, so like with me as a solicitor, I have to do a certain number of hours of training and knowledge updates in a year. And like, as you would expect with people who deal with healthcare, there's a similar sort of regime. And desperate to go back to work. But because of lack of personnel management and how poorly that was handled, And in the end, you know, I wrote to them and said, well, look, would you like to pay her to leave? I'll invite you to present us with a solution, because you can't just continue to pay this woman indefinitely.
And not have her do anything.
Exactly.
That sounds like a great arrangement, doesn't it? Right, third question. We've waffled a bit.
We have waffled a bit.
Third question from an employer. How long should employees be given long-term sick leave? And can an employer remove an employee on sick leave? We've kind of dealt with that one.
So it's how long's a piece of string? So my favourite lawyer answer to anything is, well, it depends. And that's generally what you'll open with anything with when you're advising. It comes down to size, resources as a business, what someone's off sick with, what their prognosis is. So all of the stuff that we've kind of covered, this is not a straightforward issue. We do need to kind of give it the time and attention that it deserves, particularly when we're dealing with people with health issues. Now, if we've got someone who goes off sick and it could be that it actually isn't a long-term issue, but they have like Monday-itis.
Okay. Sick days heat map. We had something for that.
So I call it Monday-itis, where, you know, someone's off routinely on Mondays or Fridays, or there's kind of a pattern to it. You can still take someone through a capability process and terminate their employment if they trigger, you know, a certain number of occasions that they're off or a certain number of days absence. Mm-hmm. Now, again, there's no statutory limit. So it's not, you know, five absences and you're gone. It's down to the employer to set their own triggers, but make sure that they are reasonable, our favourite word again, and that we're dealing with people in a fair process.
Consistent as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
Definitely. How do HRs handle an employee on long-term sick leave? What skills would you prioritise and tools in that regard?
So empathy is a big one. Okay. So it's not like dealing with a disciplinary process where someone's done something wrong. Mm-hmm. So we might be inviting people to meetings that they are fearful of, they're causing them further stress because they're thinking that their employment's at risk and it could well be at risk. And it's important that we are supportive in those meetings. And we also need to get the balance between not shying away from contacting people, because again, there's this misconception that you can't contact someone who's off on sick leave, but we also don't overdo it. So we're not hassling them. Mm-hmm. So we can contact them to give them updates about what's going on in the workforce. If there was a redundancy process going on or there's promotion opportunities available, we should be communicating those messages. And we can also ask them to attend meetings relating to their sickness absence. Now, we shouldn't be contacting them every day, though. We shouldn't be hassling them.
Hassling, yeah,
exactly. So it's finding that kind of balance in terms of the level of contact. But that's the one that I find that HR struggle with in terms of, they understand the principles, absolutely. You know, these people know how to do their jobs, but it's the kind of thing you sometimes want to bounce off somebody else and go, right, this is a situation. Mm-hmm. This is my plan in terms of contact and meetings. Sound reasonable
what
to you?
Think,
and I go, yeah, fine, crack on. Yeah. And that, I would say, is one of the subjects where I get HR just checking in to go, can you just sign off on my plan and let me know that this appears reasonable?
Yeah. In your experience, what's the sort of standard rate? My head goes like once or twice a week to check in with people.
It depends on what's going on in the workplace. So say if you've got a redundancy consultation underway, then it might mean that you need to be in touch more often than that.
Okay.
Or where you've got someone who their medical situation is changing quite quickly and they are wanting to update you. So it might be that you're wanting to check in on their welfare. It could be to get medical updates. It just depends on the situation. And again, it's back to that lawyer answer. It depends.
Context is a wonderful thing, isn't it? That's our employer questions, and now we've got three for employee. What strategies can employers implement to support employees with long-term sick?
So there's varying things that employers can do. So it could be that there are wellbeing resources that employers can be offering. So there's mental health support apps, general wellbeing apps as well. Checking in, you know, having those conversations about reasonable adjustments, offering the provision of occupational health. And we've seen this in some of the reactions to our previous videos where occupational health is by some employees almost demonized. And yes, it is a tool for employers, but it's not a weapon. And what we've had from some of the comments is that people who feel that occupational health is only on the side of the employer and, like I say, it's being used as a threat. Whereas actually, where occupational health is really, really invaluable and where their real kind of specialty can sit is, how can we adjust the workplace to make it better for this individual and so that they can take an active part in work. Now, if you've got someone who doesn't want to come back, they may see that as pushy and, you know, not in line with their agenda, but actually they can be used as a tool to support an employee as well.
Okay, interesting. The next one, we've kind of talked about this already, but the stress is prevalent as ever, isn't it?
Yeah.
More than 800,000 sick notes given for stress.
It's huge and
ridiculous.
I mean, I'm gonna
how do you gauge that as well? Like, is there a test for a stress test as such?
So with GPs and the fit notes, it's they're not going through necessarily stress assessments before somebody has signed off. So it's very, very difficult to kind of understand how the decision is made whether someone is or isn't fit for work beyond an employee saying, I don't want to go, I want to be signed off. And most of the anecdotal evidence that we're getting from GPs who are doing the press interviews is it is the latter, that someone asks to be signed off and they agree to do it.
Okay.
Now, when we dig a bit deeper into this, so when we go out and deliver training within employer businesses and we're looking at training people who are in line for promotion, wanting to be in management positions, one of the big things that I'm really asked for is training on resilience.
Okay.
So the perception from within companies and the business world is that we have a workforce that is struggling with resilience, that when we have normal day-to-day pressures or perhaps normal workplace pressures, people are struggling to deal with those.
World's gone soft. World's gone soft.
Maybe the world has gone soft, or maybe we've been focusing on other skills. So okay. Since we've come out of COVID, we've been very much focusing on, you know, work-life balance, family life, hobbies, making sure that we're getting outdoors more. And for me, the outdoors and family life is where a lot of my resilience is centered. So I can get through a stressful day at work because I know at the end of the day, I'm going to get to go walk on the
beach and I get to
go spend some time with my family.
And the dogs.
Yeah. The dogs are the family. What are you talking about? But then also when I'm going through something that's really, really tough, you know, I draw on my experiences from the RNLI world. And I think if I can go out in an inflatable boat in a storm, responsible for the lives of three other people, then I can sit in this difficult meeting and I can have a difficult conversation.
Absolutely.
Without feeling like my life's going to fall apart.
It's a mental fortitude, isn't it?
Exactly that. And it's that we're going out, and that's where the real demand for training is that people who don't have these benchmarks, they're not thinking to themselves, right, I can coach myself through this. I can do this, and then reflect on it afterwards and see what I've learned and that I've become stronger. Is there's this tendency that when somebody is pushed that they shy away from it and go, no, I'm not comfortable. I don't want to be taken outside of my comfort zone. I'm entitled to feel comfortable forever. Mm-hmm. You can't get through life like that.
No, you can't.
You just can't.
I fully agree with you as well. Like if your brain and body is aware that you've been through difficult times before and knows you can get through it, then you're put in the deep end again. Mm-hmm. Chances are you're going to react and push back.
Yeah.
Whereas some people, like you say, will shy away and be like, I can't possibly do it.
Yeah. And it's a trend that we're seeing is that this lack of resilience, there seems to be a real link between that and the prevalent rates of people who are being off with stress and anxiety. And when we dig down into it and, you know, we end up in tribunal over things like this, judges will make a comment on a difference between someone who's suffering with anxiety because of day-to-day life pressures and people who have, say, anxiety disorders, where actually that is something that is a medical condition that needs to be managed rather than a reaction to life events.
Is a medical condition based on like actual like chemical imbalances in brain?
I don't know the medical ins and outs in it, but there is that distinction is made.
I think it would be, surely.
I would assume so, you know, and I'm not diminishing anxiety in any way, shape or form. It can be really, really debilitating. But where we have that anxious reaction to normal life events, part of our development and part of our, I would say, you know, career progression is not only learning to deal with that, but also learning how to coach other people on it. So if you're a manager, if you're HR or you're, you know, in senior leadership, you need to be able to bring your team along with you. And part of that is this coaching on resilience and saying, look, I am here, I am your backup, and I'm going to help you through this. Mm-hmm. But this is how we do it. We're going to dig deep and we're going to push through and we're going to look after each other. And I think having that sort of supportive managerial environment is invaluable then if you have 100%. Got someone who's struggling with resilience.
When someone's in your corner, 100% it helps, doesn't it? But yeah, do difficult things and you'll not go far wrong. Last question, as an employee, how can employees address concerns about stigma when taking sick leave?
I think these days, because it's all over the press and it's forming such an integral part of, you know, what the Conservatives say that they're going to do, I do think there is a stigma that if a footnote goes in, that someone's seen as dodging or playing the system or gaming the system. Exactly.
Yeah,
and I think this is where we've got such a ferocious debate in the press. Because you've got headlines and particularly like you see it in like the HR press at the moment that, you know, the Conservatives, they're attacking the most vulnerable in society to try and win election votes. But actually, when you dig down to what they're trying to do, it's to identify the people that are really sick and need support and make sure they are supported and that they are dealt with fairly in terms of the workplace and that the ones who are gaming the system don't get away with it anymore, that it's made harder to do. So I don't accept the narrative that we are attacking the most vulnerable in society. I think if you read enough about what's being proposed, I don't know if it's the best way of doing it the way that they are suggesting, but I do think something needs to be done. Because I think if we don't, the stigma that's attached to sick notes is going to continue. And I think it's going to cause divisions in workplace where you've got people who go off sick and they're seen as pulling a sickie or trying it on and the other people are picking up the slack and they're working harder and they're experiencing more pressure because you've got people who've gone off sick. Now, it could be that they've gone off sick because there's something really, really wrong with them.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they're going to suffer with that stigma as a result of the trends that
regardless of whether or not there's something actually wrong.
Exactly, yeah.
They're going to think, oh, they're thinking I'm pulling a sickie because I've handed in sick now.
Which is going to make someone feel more anxious.
Absolutely,
and
it
becomes cyclical. So I think something needs to be done, but then also that's the job of HR to come down on that behaviour.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not commenting on other people when they're off sick. We're not, you know, letting people gossip in the workforce so that when someone comes back in, they feel like everyone's been talking about them. We don't accept that.
No, that's negative. That's a culture vulture.
It is. And, you know, to some extent, it could be classed as bullying.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and if someone's off sick or, you know, off with something serious and they're disabled, it could be disability discrimination. You know, it's really serious.
Whole new thing. Yeah.
So, you know, when I heard you went very well yesterday, Ollie, you know, we didn't joke about it at all in the workplace. You know, we were very respectful.
Not even Michael?
Well, maybe slightly. But
should have seen what he said to me on Teams. cool. Closing thoughts. So, summarising what we've discussed already on what's it called? Conservatives, of course.
Mm-hmm.
The Conservatives' view on what they're doing. Personally, I don't think it's like yourself. I don't think it's a bad thing. It's a bad idea. It's a good way to like kickstart the country economically because we are suffering at the minute. The lowest growing G7 country in the world.
Wow.
Which is, we were once a small, mighty little island. And
I think the problem is, you know, if we don't break the wheel at this point, it's going to get worse.
It's like a Game of Thrones reference.
It's a Game of Thrones.
Break the wheel.
I love Game of Thrones. But no, seriously, if we don't break the wheel, then so say we've got these huge numbers at the moment of people who are off sick. This means we have a smaller workforce dealing with the same amount of work who are dealing with pressure and stress and that it's causing them to potentially feel unwell. It's only going to get worse if we don't get control of it. And like you say, you know, lowest growth. That situation's not going to improve unless we can become more economically productive. And the only way we're going to do that is be very, very clear on these are the criteria in terms of how somebody gets signed off. It should not just be a box-ticking exercise that is done without somebody being assessed by a GP. Because what is the point?
There's no credibility there,
of it being a doctor's assessment if they're not actually being assessed.
Me and you could do that.
It's meaningless.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. That is, unfortunately, all we've got time for.
Great topic, though.
That was the sick note special, everybody.
And if the Conservatives don't get in, it's not going to happen anyway. But it's...
But they're fighting. I mean, there's probably more we can get on there. We've barely sort of scratched the surface. And I'm aware you have some GPs in your network.
I do. So maybe, you know, either pre-election, post-election, we'll look at getting a GP guest on.
When is the election?
This year. I should know this.
I don't know.
Sometime this year.
I was hoping you'd help me out there.
So, I've got some GPs in my network, but also if you're listening and you know someone who is desperate to appear on a podcast and talk about this topic, then, you know, please get in touch, reach out on our website and our socials at Heroes. Because our guest series will be starting soon.
Way! There's going to be one more person talking.
Yes.
We can talk less and you can hear someone else.
Thank goodness for that.
But yeah, pleasure as always, Alyssa T. You don't like that nickname, do you?
No, we're not doing Alyssa T.
Just it's pleasure as always, Alyssa. thanks for watching, everybody. Any closing thoughts from yourself?
we're going to have to just see how the year unfolds. I mean, it's the story that keeps on giving. It really does. And the more it kind of rumbles, the more that we are seeing GPs and individuals and people from HR coming out. So, you know, watch the headlines. If there's anything that you want to contribute to the debate, then, you know, like I say, please reach out. But yeah, been great talking to you again, Ollie.
Absolutely, as ever. Cheers. Thanks, everyone. Like the video, watch, subscribe, all that good stuff. We'll see you next time.
Until next time, we're your host signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media or even HRER at heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect, but by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier and more productive workplaces.